We've seen this before. We have seen funny things happen. It's been almost 6 hours in hell. And finally, we're going to have a winner. Pollard at the front. Gilbert behind. They come back around. It's got to be launched soon. Who is going to take it? We focus on these two. They focus on the finish line. Half a lap to go now. Pollitt waits. He will be nervous. He's never won a race even close to the magnitude of this before. And Gilbert's going to go on the inside. Here goes Gilbert. Gilbert's driving for five. He's out. He has the gap. But can Pollitt come around him? Gilbert looking to the finish. Gilbert's going to do it. It's fantastic. Philippe Gilbert. Five-star Phil does it. And a Koenig Quickstep are winners of Paris-Roubaix again.
And welcome back, cycling fans, to the Between Two Wheels podcast. This is episode 106. This is your host, Tyler Yonke, doing a solo flyby tonight. It's Friday afternoon, actually. And we thought we'd get a quick roundup, some of the action that's taken place in the World Tour. We'll do NCNCA roundup. We'll do World Tour roundup. Lodi Crit did NCNCA. We got Sea Otter Classic, Paris-Roubaix. What's coming up in the Ardennes Classics is pretty exciting. I hope you enjoyed Paris-Roubaix. I hope you enjoyed our show with Mike Sayers. Mike, thanks for coming on, doing a recap of the classics that have been. The Paris-Roubaix preview show. Go back and listen to that if you'd want to. Some of that's outdated, but there's a lot of good info. Mike and I talked for almost an hour and a half. Really good info on the classics and his input on those predictions that we've had. I don't think we nailed anything there, but it was interesting to see kind of how some things are. Things that make you go, viewer and listener comments. And in this episode, everyone is a champion. All right. Thanks for joining us. As I said, this is a Between Two Wheels podcast. You know, check us out on, share the show. Go out there. And you know, it's really easy to do. The most important thing is just make a comment, whether you like us or not. Comment on some of our, any of the platforms that you're using. We're also on YouTube on the Between Two Wheels podcast there. This started with the NCNCA and a roundup. We talked about Chico. We were at Chico. There were some good videos. We had a Crit video. Jeff Linder, had a video where he had brought Chris Reichert in. It was the camera on Chris Reichert's bike from the pro race. It was really good. A lot of good info. I like the banter between those two. And they also did one for Lodi. So we have Lodi Crit here. I'm just going to go walk through some of these results. I wasn't there. There's some good videos that we have. You can check those out. Once again, Linder and Chris Reichert. Speaking of Chris Reichert in the Cat P1-2 race, you had Chris Reichert coming in. He was in a break with Jonathan Baker, Robert Terra, and Crichton Gruber. Teams, Mike's Bikes for Chris Reichert, Jonathan Baker for Touchstone Racing, who, by the way, is a master, destroyer of all masters this year. Robert Terra of Tarun and Gruber, Crichton Gruber, Team Swift. And then Sam Benedict of Team Mike's Bikes rounds out the top five, winning the field sprint there. I know that those four guys got in a break, and if you want to see the video, I'll link to it up here on our YouTube channel. But if otherwise you want to check out Jeff Linder's video for that, check him out on NorCal Cycling Photos, I believe, is his handle for YouTube. In the women's race, we had the Cat 1-2-3, Marissa Axel, the JL Velo Cycling team, Juliet Hyde, JL Velo Cycling, Beverly Cheney of LBC for the 1-2-3 there. The Masters men 35s, Chris Baker comes out, Touchstone Racing. He wins first place there with Josh Carling in second, SP2 Life. So Josh dropped down to the Masters 35s from doing the P1-2s. And then Jonathan Baker, Touchstone Racing, getting third place. Josh Wood of doesn't have his team here, and then Randy Bramblett. So those are all good sprinters. Ryan Chipernick of our team, data-driven athlete, in eighth place. But you look at Baker, Carling, Baker, Wood, Bramblett, Joe Chacon, Bergman, Chipernick. I mean, these are guys that can finish the race off well. So it looks like it came down to a field sprint, I'm imagining, although those top three there could be a breakaway as well. Good job for all those guys that showed up. You know, Lodi has traditionally been a race that's been more in the summer, June, the little hotter times. I mean, I've done it, had to do the ice sock, really try to prepare for the heat down there. And this year they moved it earlier. Matter of fact, I don't think it's kind of been a little sketchy whether it's going to even happen the last few years. So it was good to see that happened, even though it's in the cooler time of the year, and it's actually been pretty nice. Sea Otter, you know, I did not go down to Sea Otter, and the results are so varied there. All I can really do is give you some idea of what I've heard. It looks like, you know, this used to be a big race, big pro race for mountain biking, road riding, and it seems to have dwindled down a little bit. I heard some complaints about Velonews, former Velonews editor and now Cycling Tips, Neil, I almost wanted to say Neil Diamond. It's not Neil Diamond, but Neil Rogers, and indicated that he got there at 10 o'clock and the pro mountain bike race was just finishing. You know, no crowds there. So, you know, it used to be a race that really brought in the riders and the venue. And it looks like even from an aspect of the mountain bikers who you get bigger draws for, I think, then, you know, the road seems to, is it dying? Can we say it's dying? I don't know. It's doing something not so great. Anyway, Sea Otter seems to have maybe kind of gone away from some of that. I did see a good video from Vegan Cyclist out there on the road race where he said it was the toughest race he's ever done. That climb started off, it looks like they were getting pinched and people were dropped, just the power that you needed to do to hold on to that. And so his race is all showing about trying to get back onto the group and the power that it took to do that. And it was a pretty good video for that. If you want to go check it out, Vegan Cyclist. And, you know, maybe we'll just talk real quick about Vegan Cyclist. He's put out some videos. I've been wanting to get a hold of him and have some conversation. We had talked at Chico, and I do plan on still doing that. There's some stuff I wanted to just bring out and some questions I think I could ask that when you're doing self-editing, you're not going to necessarily be sharing with everybody. Not to say that he's not forthcoming. I mean, shit, he's very forthcoming. Matter of fact, that's kind of my topic here is he puts out a video. He's starting a new team, the SPL2 Life. They get sponsorship. So his last few videos have been a little shocking with he's talking about the breakdown of the numbers. Now, it's not shocking that you're talking about breakdown of the numbers, but every race is talking about the cost involved for the team. And, you know, every time we're showing up to a race, there's $30 here, you know, $100 here. So my only problem with it, and maybe I was a small business owner myself, I just give a few tips out here. Seems like to me, maybe I'm misunderstanding that he got some cash at the beginning of the year. Let's just throw out a number. I think it was $30,000. I don't know. Let's just say it was $30,000. Maybe it was $15,000. Maybe it was somewhere closer to that, $20,000. You get a number for that. You're going to use it primarily for race entries, some travel, maybe kits. You do a budget beginning of the year. Kits cost this much. You know, there's always overruns. There's a few things here. Kits are in already, so that's been taken care of. Now you've basically got races and entry fees. You figure out the races you want to go to. You calculate how much that's going to be. You do as much as you can pre-reg as possible to save yourself some money. And then that money is allocated for the duration of the year for those races. If you go over or you don't have money and you want to do some races, maybe the guys pay for it themselves. This isn't your wife's grocery money. And that's, I think, the perception that I'm getting, that this seems a little odd. Why are you worrying about it so much if you've got sponsorship money and now you've got teams that wanted to go do, or your riders that want to go do races? You have that money and it's been allocated. It's set in there. You don't maybe get to roll it over for the end of the year. You don't get to go and spend it on your own kid stuff, I'm assuming. So why fret? As a matter of fact, it's fine that you have a budget and that this is for your team and that you're worried about cost effectiveness of everything. Totally understand. As a business owner, I do that myself. But you've got a fixed income. You've already got this plot of money. Now you've got these races you want to do. You just budget it out and you get so far in the season and that's it. So my suggestion would be do that and then maybe not make it so, because it's going to stress your team out. Your team is going to start, if everything's on a dollar and everything's being calculated on the dime that it costs for this and this and this, at some point it's going to really degrade your team and it's not going to help cohesion. Matter of fact, there were comments that was already in there of, look, we need to ride together. We need to train together more because we got to get more cohesion. One of the things that'll help that is to not stress to them how much every time they get dropped, the cost of getting dropped is. Just a suggestion out there. Anyway, welcome your comments on that. And by all no means am I ripping on, look, I'm sure he gets his comments anyway, ripping on Tyler Pierce on any of this. I'm just trying to, I've been through this myself. I've been on a small team, small budget, and the stress that comes about that, the owner that's, you know, getting taken away your IRS problems, your team budget and your team bonuses are going here and there. Totally get it. I don't think you're in those situations. So to keep the cohesion, just a suggestion, maybe lighten up on that. Then again, as a viewer, I'm enjoying the show. So keep coming on as far as entertainment value goes. Please share more with us. I love that. As a team owner, maybe dial it down a little bit. Okay. Upcoming races we have for the NorCal tomorrow, actually. Saturday is Copperopolis Road Race, kind of our hell of the north. It's famous for its bad roads, the distance and the climbing and the bad roads. I'm skipping it myself. But good luck to all those that are going to be showing up out there. Ward's Ferry Road Race on the 27th, Regalado Road Race on the 28th. So I'm probably not going to show up to anything until the first part of May when the Golden State Race Series takes place in Rancho Cordova. It's put on by Real Strata Racing. It's a really good series. You could do a ton of races the first day of a crit. You could do multiple events, at least for me, I can. The next day is a circuit race where they use part of the crit course and then extend it out. It's got a real good long finishing straight for a sprint. They also have a team time trial, like a 4-person team time trial that is all Merck style. So, hey, come out there, check it out. Check out our podcast last year with Derek Novice, where we talked to him about that race. All right, let's just jump right into the World Tour. That's kind of the thing that's been shaking and baking right now. So we had Paris-Roubaix. I don't know if you saw that race. It's a really good race. I would like to have Chris and Kurt come in and talk again about, maybe we'll do a breakdown of what we saw in that race. I woke up, I wanted to see them coming into Arenberg Forest, so I got up pretty early. I saw that section. Greg Van Avermaet's leading them in there. Sagan's near the back. You have Wout Van Aert. He has a mechanical at the time. He actually runs Sagan off the road. There's carnage all over the place. They come out of the forest. Van Aert has to chase. This is the interesting part, is to see him trying to play the Matthew Vanderpool role from Flanders, where he was chasing. He's done, but he comes back and ends up getting fourth. So Wout comes and he's chasing and he's closing it down. He gets a mechanical, so he's closing that down. He gets back on, and then when he gets back on, they're like, hey, let's get you a team bike. So he drops off, he gets a new bike. Or maybe it was right before then, but I think he had caught on, and then he's getting the bike. So he's chasing to get back into the group because he had right there close. Comes around a right-hand corner, just yard sales it across the road, gets back up, gets fixed in, finally chases, he gets back on. And then a little bit later, the race starts going up the road, he gets into the move, and he gets into the winning move for the day. However, his legs, I think, are toast from all the work he had done, 20 minutes to get back onto the group, which is very impressive. So we'll give some highlights of that. That the group goes off, it's got... actually, Gilbert had been up in the break previously. You got Niels Pollitt, Philippe Gilbert of Deconinck Quickstep, Pollitt with Katusha, Yves Lampert with Deconinck Quickstep, Sepp Van Mark with EF Education First goes, Peter Sagan goes, and you had Wout Van Aert. Wout ends up coming off. There's five of them left. There's Gilbert, Pollitt, Sagan, Sepp Van Mark, and Wout Van Aert, and actually Lampert. So what, six there? And first they get Gilbert and Pollitt head up the road, and then you've got, or maybe Sagan was up there with them. I think that's the way it was. And then you had the other three behind, and Lampert and it gets rid of, and it was Sepp Van Mark, and they get rid of Van Aert. And then they Wout Van Aert, and then Lampert decides to, once that happens, he's just going to drag Van Mark back up to the group, which I was like, this is not what you do. You make Sepp Van Mark do all the work, but he pulled him back up. Okay, great. And I think it actually plays into the fact that Lampert was super, super strong, and probably knowing in the end that you get Sepp Van Mark up there, he's not going to win the day on the sprint. So then they get back up there. Next thing you know, Gilbert and Pollitt take off, and they're not to be seen again. They come into the stadium. Pollitt is leading out. Gilbert tries to take it. And the commentary, of course, was going, Pollitt has track experience, so therefore, watch out for him. But this isn't a technical track. The walls aren't banked that great. So Gilbert ends up taking the win. Then you have Lampert coming in third in between them. And then Seth Van Mark ends up out sprinting Sagan. I think Sagan was just done for the top five there. So once again, we had talked about Sagan not really have been showing up, not really have been the guy in Flanders that you hope for, but he ended up coming well. The other interesting part is you got Dekoninck Quickstep with one, two, three, four, I think four or five guys in the top 10. So that's quite a smattering. But EF Education first, they had fourth and 10th, Langeveld and Seth Van Mark. That was pretty impressive. Niels Pollitt, I think, might have just saved the Classics campaign for Katusha themselves. So otherwise, they've been, you know, that was one that we talked about, winners and losers in the last time with Mike Sayers. Totally missed out on Kittle. Kittle has been a no-show anywhere and probably the loser of the upcoming season. And it'll be interesting. You know, there's been comments that the team has sent, he's not training. We kind of have to watch him. So it will be really interesting to see what happens with him come up later. And maybe in Tour California if he shows up. You know, it's kind of some sprinters that are looking to be on the rise end up coming to California. Speaking of Tour of California, Between Two Wheels podcast has got their media credentials. Both Chris, all three of us, Chris, Kurt, and I, have all got our media credentials. So we'll be there for the press conference to begin with. We'll be there at least stage one, two, maybe three. Not going to take off work for a week and head down south. No one's paying our bills. If you guys want to donate to the show and have that happen, we can have a conversation about that. I have taken I have booked the whole week off. But I don't have plans to go anywhere further than maybe San Jose. Okay, what else happened in the world tour going on here? Tour Turkey, six stages, 16th to the 21st, so it ends up on Sunday. I'm just going to briefly highlight some of these things. So you got, it's really got the Queen Day stage five tomorrow with a climb, ends on a HC category climb that's 164 kilometers. But up until now, you've had Sam Bennett of Bora Hansgrohe winning stage one. He won stage two. Fabio Jakobsen for Dekoninck Quickstep wins stage three with Bennett in second. Interesting third place there was Mark Cavendish. And fourth that day was Caleb Ewing. And then stage four today had Caleb Ewing with the win. Sam Bennett in fourth and Lobato in second, which was an interesting little drag. They had a pop climb up to the finish. And it looked like a really easy win for me watching it for Caleb Ewing. But then the way he just collapsed afterwards, I think you realize that it was a slow developing finish. So it looked like it was easy for him to just jump out and go. But the reality is it was uphill. So pretty impressive to see Caleb Ewing. I think is the second World Tour win for the year. He did have one taken away at the Tour Down Under. So that's what you have for there. Just finished was a Tour of the Basque Country. Basque race, Euskaltel Herraka Izulia, also the Vuelta al País Vasco, or also known as Tour of the Basque Country, but now known as Itzulia Basque Country. Okay, whatever. It's one of the best one-week races on the tour calendar, bar none, and it had a fantastic finish. You know, we had mentioned this race, Mike Sayers and I, in the last episode, just to kind of talk about Alaphilippe and Max Schachmann. Max Schachmann of the Bora Hansgrohe team, he won three stages. He won the first one, which is individual time trial. He won stage three. He won stage four. Sandwiched in there was Alaphilippe winning stage two, and then his teammate, Schachmann's teammate, Emmanuel Bachmann, wins stage five, and he took the overall lead. Then you have, as Dave Toll would say, a Donnybrook, and you had all the gates, all hell broke open for stage five. On stage five, you had a breakaway of Izaguirre for Team Astana. You had Dan Martin for UAE Emirates. You had Fuglsang. You had Adam Yates. And there was one other in there. Tadej Pogačar. So they were all in there. His teammates with Dan Martin. I think they were off like 40-some K to go, a few climbs. And they needed a few minutes to really take this lead. And in the end, Adam Yates wins a stage with a quick little sprint over kind of a false flat there over Dan Martin, then Fuglsang. And the overall win still ends up going to, well, actually, final GC on that day. I'm showing here that he did, Izaguirre did end up getting the overall win that day. So he got it first. Dan Martin was second. Emmanuel Bachmann, 31 seconds back in third place. Then Fuglsang, fourth, and Adam Yates, fifth. So that whole breakaway cracked the team, the Bora Hansgrohe team. You saw Shockman on the front doing as much work as he could to try to bring that back. Bachman himself had to get on the front to try to bring that back with the climbs. And those five guys off the front just worked incredibly well. And they were all motivated to just, you know, like Yates was there. I'm going to get a stage win. I'm going to work as good as I can. Dan Martin's still hoping maybe to get rid of Izagirre. So he was working hard. You get a top 10, top two, actually, for him. And then, of course, Izagirre and his own teammate Fuglsang, they just loaded it. And very interesting week of racing there. And it was good to see Shockman come up. It was good to see Bachman come up as well, two up-and-coming riders. And then just kind of get to see the team. You know, Astana, once again, with a stage win and the overall win for, not a stage win, but the overall win on an early season. You know, at some point, we're not going to be able to say it's early season anymore, but pretty impressive for them. They've had a great season already, but not their classics, as we mentioned last time. Speaking of the classics, the 2019 Brabantse Pil race results. I don't know. It's a midweek stage, midweek classic that they had. That was won by Andre Vanderpool. He got a little break at the end with Julian Alaphilippe, Tim Wellens, and Michael Matthews. And it was a slow, gradual kick up to the finish. Well, it had some steep sections and then the final kick. And you're like, Michael Matthews actually hits this thing and Vanderpool right on his wheel, Alaphilippe right on his wheel. And Tim Wellens, you didn't expect him to really overtake those three. I mean, those are some great finishing guys for, you know, punchy stuff. And Vanderpool takes it over and ends up with the win that day. Very impressive. I don't know if you're going to see him much more racing on the road the rest of the season with his Corendon Circus team, his second tier. And he also, though, I saw in the news, big teams are courting him, as you would expect. And he's like, you just have to wait a bit. I'm not quite ready for this. Okay, coming up on the World Tour calendar, the Amstel Gold Race that comes up this Sunday. 260 kilometers, tons of climbs. Defending champion Michael Valgrim, he's now with Team Dimension Data. Last year he was with Astana. He is in the race. That should be a great great opening to the Ardennes Classics. That one has a little more of a flat finish. And then you have, but it has climbs all throughout it. But I'm saying the last few K is more of a flat. And then you have the midweek, La Flèche Wallonne. That's on the 24th, the Wednesday. That has some great climbing in it as well. And then, and it also finishes up. That has the steep pitch that it finishes up on that you, it's like a 1K, and or actually, I think it's less than a K, maybe like 800 meters or so. Valverde's won up there. Gilbert's won up there before. I think, did Alaphilippe win there last year? It's just that kind of race, and it will be great viewing for this one as well. Then Liège-Bastogne-Liège, that's got a bunch of big, that more of a climber's race for the classics. We saw that one won last year by Bob Jungels, I think, won that. You had Mike Woods, Romain Bardet, all on the podium. Great little trio of fantastic climbers. It'll be interesting to see Woods. And you know, another one was Lawson Craddock had a good race that day. He was off in the break. He ended up getting caught and still holds, I think, for top 10. That was one that Dan Martin had. That was one that Dan Martin had some tire trouble. He was trying to get away. They're trying to get Bob Jungels. No one is chasing him down the last 20K. A bunch of ones and twos here and there. Once again, Liège, great race. And we'll see how that one goes as well. Okay, a few comments from our viewers / listeners. YouTube comments from David Gertchman. Hey, I had made some comments about vegan cyclists. So he's like, hey, the veggie bro gives a lot of good info for new racers like myself. When you use veggie bro, I just have to talk in like the Spicoli accent a little bit. Yes, totally. I get it. That's actually when I talked to Tyler at the race himself. He's like, look, I'm doing these videos a lot. This was off recording, but this is what he told me personally. It was like, look, I do a lot of these videos. I'm really trying to help some like young riders come out there and to teach them some strategy and you know, give them some ideas, all this. Totally understand. I responded back, I do enjoy their videos also. My thing is, though, I do differ with him on some race strategy, and maybe later on we can point some of that out specifically. Maybe one of those was that crit with, do you want to say Justin or Jason Hammond? I know that I had a real big problem with the way that guy rode that race. And you know what would have been interesting to do is to talk to Sayers about what he thought about some of that strategy. You know, I've had some problems with unwritten rules should just go away, and who cares about them anymore? Don't really give a crap about that. And if guys put the knife in you and they take it, it's up to you to try to, you know, and Tyler's credit on that video, if you go watch it, he did try to get rid of that guy. It didn't happen. The guy ends up winning the race too. Whatever. I've had some problems with teams that try to actively block. I think that's a little shitty. But I totally understand it's your prerogative to do so. My thing is, if people are willing to work and you're willing to just drive through the line, just let them have it and let them do so. Or attack off there. Don't jam your brakes on him in the corner. That's happened to me a few times. And, you know, big deal. All right. Some things that make you go, hmm. Two issues I got here. 1 hour record. New hour record. Victor Campenaerts goes down to Mexico. He breaks Bradley Wiggins' old UCI record. I think it had been held for 5 years, I want to say. He covers 55.089 kilometers in Aguascalientes, Mexico. I'm sorry, I butchered that. So just read a little bit here. During the 2017, this is what it is. If you remember this guy, Victor Campenaerts, from the 2017 Giro, it was a stage 10 individual time trial. He had a sign in his chest, basically asking this girl to a date. Okay. He asked her for the date. She responded and said, "Victor also called me yesterday. We just had to pick up a date," she added. "I would like to eat, ride a bike. Maybe he won't go to after the Giro." Maybe there's a language issue on this interpretation. "I certainly do not want to go to the movies. I always fall asleep." Okay, so I don't know. Needless to say, they did not, it wasn't a love connection, as you would say. And the word on them is they didn't keep on dating. Maybe he took her to the movies and she fell asleep. I don't know. Anyway, Victor Campenaerts gets the new record. It was interesting to watch that. They streamed it live on YouTube. And some, if you look for Cyclocosm, his Twitter feed, you can see a little bit of he had the transcript going across the screen there, and there was some interpretation. You know, transcripts could be weird about what the actual was saying, but it was a gentleman speaking English in a Spanish accent. It was just funny to see the correction of the words that were coming across. Something about semen on the course. Anyway. Congrats to Victor Campenaerts. It would be good to see him do the Merckx style and see if he could get that record, because that's one way to actually correlate the actual differences in the two ways of doing it, and we can compare those, you know, time to time. Last thing here, everyone is a champion. Okay. a friend / acquaintance of mine posted on Facebook, I'm only bringing this up because it kind of plays into, I would kind of want to explain what my thing was, but he had posted on there about Phil Gilbert winning and how great it was, and that Philippe Gilbert and, you know, winning, or anyone who has completed the Fondo, the Paris-Roubaix Fondo, is a champion. So I was like, hey, what? Fondo? Phil Gilbert, I mean, I get it. He won Paris-Roubaix. That's a big deal. He's definitely a champion. So I replied, as kind of a snarky person that I am, I said, "Fondo, are you drunk?" Now this set off a whole maelstrom and a firestorm of responses back and forth, you know, him calling out people that had done. So look, there's a Paris-Roubaix Fondo. Yes, I know about it. Okay. People do it. They do these races. They do them the day before or whatever. And he had done it with some friends some of them are very good riders, and they had finished it. Not a problem. My issue is that, and then he said later on, yes, we're all champions, because I'm like, well, did you win? Once again, being a smartass. And no, we didn't win. But everyone that finished is a champion. Okay, if you want to just say everyone that finished is a champion, I'm down with that, sure. If you're in the same sentence comparing Philippe Gilbert's win, sprinting off Niels Pollitt, dumping Peter Sagan, getting rid of Wout van Aert, dropping Greg Van Avermaet, getting rid of Degenkolb, Michael Matthews, all these guys, you're getting rid of these guys and you are winning Paris-Roubaix as a monument, one of the most difficult races in the world. And you want to say that he and you, for finishing a ride, are both champions? Maybe your definition of champion is not the same as mine. No offense. I'm saying your comment about everyone being a champion and me questioning it is not diminishing you. it's diminishing Philippe Gilbert. Okay, that's my problem, and that's not, I don't really have a problem, you know. And it kind of reminds me of it reminds me of Syndrome on The Incredibles. I don't know if you remember that, but he's basically like making, he wants to make everyone a superhero. And he's like, if everyone can be super, and when everyone's super, no one will be. Think about it. All right. Winners and losers this week. Well, I went, Philippe Gilbert is obviously a big win. Oh, back to the champions thing. You know, they actually have, and this is kind of the whole thing of maybe the winners are some of these guys that got time cut in Paris-Roubaix. Yes, they have a time cut in the race in the Paris-Roubaix official UCI sanctioned classic race in Paris to Roubaix. Okay. They have time cut. So there's guys that actually finish, they come through, they get on the boards, they go around the velodrome and they come across the line and they're done and they get on the official result as not finished. Okay. They time cut those guys. Those guys still finish the race. Who knows what happened? I say that sucks that you would do that for a one-day race like that. Give them a time. Give them a finish. Give them a champion's belt or something. Okay? Those are my champions. Losers, maybe it is EF Education first. And I only say that because they seem to have left two issues out there. One is Taylor Finney gets a bike mechanical or some sort. He's on the side of the road waiting for the team car. Never materializes. You know, we talked to Mike Sayers and he was talking about, you know, the difficulties of trying to help your team and having wheels and the cars, and it's chaos everywhere. So I get that. Then the other problem is Seth Van Mark ends up having to get a bike change and he's on Langefeld's bike and his DI2 goes out. I think it's DI2, either that or SRAM. Either way, his electronic shifting goes out. And I think he was spending his legs. You can see that in the last bit of the race when he was having trouble because he had this giant gear that he was pushing in comparison to probably what he wanted to. And that's the problem you have there. All right. Hey, really appreciate joining us quickly on a Friday for a quick little podcast here, a little update. Look, I'm excited about the Ardennes Classics coming up. I'm excited about you're going to have the Giro coming up. That's going to be exciting as well. And it's just pretty cool to see everything that happened. But Liège is going to be a race to see if anybody that's going to the Giro or even guys that are going to the Tour, kind of how they're riding, and you start to get a little bit of a forecast from that, because that's usually a Grand Tour style climber that can win Liège. So we have that coming up for us. Once again, Valverde, Alaphilippe, I'm not sure who else is there for, we'll maybe review that this week for Flesh Wallonne. And it should be exciting. I love that finish up there. So, you know, good luck to all those guys. Once again, thank you for joining us. Check us out on our YouTube channel. Check us out on all the subscription platforms you have for podcasts, and share the show. Once again, give us some comments. We'll give you some feedback. And once again, you are a champion.
I'll be a bigger hero than you ever were.
You mean you killed off real heroes so that you could pretend to be one?
Oh, I'm real. Real enough to defeat you! And I did it without your precious gifts, your oh-so-special powers. I'll give them heroics. I'll give them the most spectacular heroics anyone's ever seen! And when I'm old and I've had my fun, I'll sell my inventions so that everyone can be superheroes. Everyone can be super! And when everyone's super, no one will be.